need to fix a lot of these underlying issues that have affected America's culture and healthcare system for a long period of time, so that by the time we get appropriate medical countermeasures, they can be distributed fairly, equitably, and efficiently, and that they will actually work.
We have to leave it there, Ed Yong. Thanks so much for being with us. Science writer at The Atlantic. We'll link to all of your articles. A little correction. Trump didn't go to Bedminster in New Jersey. He went to Trump National in Potomac Falls, Virginia, as the pandemic rages. And that ends today's show. A huge thanks to all of our team working at home and as well working here in the studio to make sure Democracy Now! Continues. And remember, show that you care by wearing a mask. Protect all. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
KBOO Portland,
where it is 8 a.m. in time for Wednesday Talk Radio with your host, Paul Roland. Stay tuned.
To keep it, there's a price to pay. Each generation's got to win it anew, 'cause it's not something handed down to you.
Freedom isn't free. Freedom isn't free. You gotta pay a price. You gotta sacrifice for your liberty.
There was a general by the name of George, with a small band of men at Valley Forge. But the comfort of home for the cold and independence, 'cause he paid the price.
Freedom isn't free. Freedom isn't free. You gotta pay a price. You gotta sacrifice.
Yeah, right. That's Up With People, Freedom Isn't Free, which I have played on it in its entirety on the folk music show that I used to do when I was able to come in and do it. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to make the transition like everybody else has to doing it remote. Yeah, I keep hoping that I'll be able to get the requisite hardware and software and all that, but you don't need to know all that because this is Wednesday Talk Radio and not Thursday Morning Folk. So, freedom isn't free. Freedom to wear a mask, to not wear a mask. The freedom to inflict deadly force on unarmed African Americans, the freedom to continue to open up economically when now cases of COVID-19 are once again exploding. Fauci says that we risk spiraling out of control. What does that actually mean? So much to talk about. It, of course, is coming hard up on July 4th, so I thought I would open up with song and open up the phone line for talking about what the heck is freedom in time of pandemic, in time of this national reckoning and uprising, which is rippling throughout the world. And once again, calling into question the basic foundations of patriarchal, colonial, white control. So, 503-231-8187, that's the number. I also do have a Facebook page, Wednesday KBOO Wednesday Talk Radio. You can go and like that, and I'll be checking that occasionally. And you can write me comments there. And 503-231-8187, that's the number. Last week, I would really like to hear from people who don't regularly call in to Wednesday Talk Radio. So maybe people step back, people who maybe do feel freer or more privileged or entitled to have your voice count in this world, and maybe just step back, give some space to other people who are maybe a little, I don't know, less assertive, aggressive, less, more pensive. I know that when I've wanted to call in to various stations, my mind's racing a mile a minute. I'm thinking and rethinking what I'm going to say and getting all nervous. I mean, this is, there's not millions of people listening. It's a relatively small community. We're all friends here, aren't we? It's a safe place. 503-231-8187. So what is freedom, and are we actually enlarging the spheres of freedom with these protests, with the Mississippi flag finally being retired with its odious symbol of slavery and oppression ensconced in it, with statues being taken down, symbols, and not just symbols, but symbols have power, just like language has power. I was thinking about all these statues of colonizers and enslavers and patriarchs that are taking a tumble, and thinking of how the colonial process is written into all the place names. Think of the Columbia River, speaking of Columbus. Thinking of Mount Hood. Who the heck was Hood anyway? That these things have a real meaning, especially to the indigenous people who had their own names, still have their own names for all the rivers and creeks and valleys and mountains and hills and sacred places. Anyway, a lot to talk about. I do want to talk about this idea of freedom, because we're really being, being an entitled white cis male who does have a chance to talk on the radio. I feel very privileged to have this spot, and as I like to say, I do try to use it responsibly. Hope I do. Feel free to call me if you think I don't. But I've been challenged over the past decade to deal with this legacy, this history. I didn't know anything about the 13th Amendment. When I got back to the U.S. from where I lived after living in Italy for a long time, a whole other story, I got back right when Occupy started happening, and I was in Washington, D.C., and there was a heated debate, actually a real face-to-face debate that I came across with some native-born African-American residents of D.C. having a discussion over the term Occupy, since they had felt like they were in occupied territory their whole lives, especially the police, but, you know, look around D.C., the symbols, monumental symbols of an unjust colonial slave-based order were all around the sea. And so that was very interesting. So I joined the Criminal Injustice Committee of Occupy D.C., which was a real eye-opening experience for me. As I said, I really didn't know that much, shockingly little, about the legacy of slavery and its aftermath, its continuation under other names, 13th Amendment among them. Anyway, so, you know, it was a kind of a hard reckoning for me, first to realize that, you know, post 50 years old, I had never learned the stuff that I should have. Should have learned it in school, should have learned it in various movements I had been involved in, should have learned it on my own, should have probably seen the signs that were there, and I missed. I, fortunately for myself, had been immersed in another significant part of our brutal history, which is the history of colonization of the indigenous peoples, because I got very involved with the fishing rights movement here in the Pacific Northwest. An amazing, amazing history, rich struggle, and rich culture, as were and are all the indigenous cultures around the country and around the world. So I got a pretty heavy dose of that history, both here and nationally, and a lot of reading, a lot of hearing conversations. But as I said, I missed that other major pillar of the founding of the United States, which was slavery in its aftermath. So I was very fortunate to have had that opportunity to learn, and I think that this is a moment where a lot of people are hopefully feeling that they are fortunate to finally having their eyes opened up to this history and hopefully opening ourselves up more and more to it. Is this a time of reckoning? So anyway, so in terms of freedom, obviously, you know, in terms of opening our eyes, those of us who haven't been subject to the vicious side of this culture have maybe had more access to the freedoms that it purportedly provides, and it does provide more for, as I said, cis white males. And we see the other side of it more and more. We see, you know, with social media showing these brutal images of people having their lives snuffed out by these guarantors of freedom for the corporations, mostly in the commercial classes. Anyway, that's the freedom that is really what United States means most in the world and has provoked a lot of resentment around the world. And maybe this is a reckoning for that too. I heard a really good interview on The Old Mole on Monday, tying together the projection of military force with the projection of police force, the intimate connection between the military and the police. Historically, they're intimately connected. The projection of freedom for European Americans and American expansion was made by militias, first militias, then the U.S. Army and the Texas Rangers, and these things. Then that sort of that frontier justice, whatever, got sort of enshrined in our police forces. Anyway, I could talk at great length about this, but I'd like to hear what you've got to say. 503-231-8187. Again, you know, if you're a regular caller in, maybe just take a few deep breaths and give some other folks who don't normally call in. And if you don't normally call in, this is your chance. If you really want to speak your mind, have a good conversation. I always like to have conversations sort of build that people respond to what I've said and what other callers have said instead of just, you know, thinking of what you're thinking. All right, 503-231-8187. We got anybody on cue, Sonia?
I believe Gordon is waiting. Gordon, go ahead. You're live.
Hi, good morning. Gordon. Thanks for being there, doing what you're doing. Appreciate it. So through this whole Black Lives Matter thing, it's been really, looking back into our history and really finding out, you know, more about, I'm 50 years old and, you know, I'm still waking up every day to the hardships of the Black community and the Indigenous American community and stuff like that. And I hear a lot of, obviously we need to be fighting for Black Lives Matters. I mean, they do matter. I mean, I love them a lot. I appreciate them. I date within that culture. And but I also feel that the lost ones are the Indigenous Americans. I've been really thinking about them a lot and what they went through when we came through and created genocide against them, and nobody's still speaking up for the Indigenous American. And so my thing is, I just wanted to go through and kind of educate just real quickly. I went to a yoga retreat, a yoga roundup in Pendleton a number of years ago, and they had a guy named Wild Bill who does the horse riding in the Pendleton Roundup, and he's an Indigenous American. And they had some speakers that came out, and they were speaking about the Indigenous American, the Indian, and how they function in Oregon. And they were telling me, which a lot of people don't know, that John McLaughlin used to take all the Indians from the Northwest, and he would take them to Oregon City, and he would hang them in Oregon City. And when it was the capital and stuff, and for stupid crimes, not even crimes, you know. And then I found out through this whole thing that the Washington Redskins, I found out why that was. They used to skin the Indians alive and cut their bottoms off and wear them. Rich people would wear them as leather clothing. And they would take the genitalia of the children and the women, and they would make rubber bands so the rich people would hold their hats on to their heads in New York. And that's why they don't like the Redskins, Washington Redskins, and it goes even deeper. I'm still even naive now. And so what they did is they came through and they wiped out all the intelligence, and they took all the strong away, and they took all the fighters and the storytellers, and they killed them all and left these people to fend for themselves. And they removed some of the DNA that they need to move forward and prosper. And so that, and then you go to the Black culture, the African-American culture, and to see that they were used to create wealth, and they didn't get paid for anything, and they built this country. The Chinese, the Indians, and the Black people built this country and got paid nothing. You know, and so I'm really, as becoming into my 50s and going through the midlife extravaganza and sometimes chaos and stuff, I'm starting to really feel like I feel guilty, and I feel powerless almost, because there's so much, and we're fighting against such a corporate entity, this fascist corporate sociopath, that I feel for them so much, and I wish I can do more. But I guess I'm just, you know, as I get more educated, I just fall in love with them even more.
This is definitely a moment, if there ever was one, to take for a change. So we all need to join in whatever way we can.
We do, and it's just sad that, you know, it's good that the Black Lives Matters and stuff, but I think we need to bring in more of the Indigenous American and the Indians too, because they're both the same.
Well, I want to take issue with your language a little bit, that we need to take them in. I think that's, and also, I mean, you know, who are we, you and I, for one thing. I mean, this is a movement that's sort of taking off, and it's driven by, specifically in this case right now, you know, African Americans, because of the continual brutalization of mostly young African men. And I think that, you know, we certainly don't have much power to, you know, either direct or bring in any particular thing. I think recognizing that there are still voices that need to be heard is certainly appropriate. I think I don't the whole idea of interjecting myself or yourself into this, I find this somewhat problematic, because that's been the whole white savior kind of thing. We need to always be aware of that, but I think we can make a political point, perhaps, that that you feel, or whoever feels that maybe there's other aspects that could be included in this, but it's evolving on its own. And so I think the only place, this is probably not necessarily the place, the only place would be if you're actively involved in the struggle to to join in, and if you're able to support indigenous struggles here and make that happen, then that's a good way to do it. And thank you for your call. I really appreciate it.
Well, and the last thing I say is, I'd just like to see this start expanding out. I'd love to see it start expanding out into, you got BLM, and then you've got the indigenous element, and starting to become this huge movement that they just can't stop on all fronts, I think I just would love to see it become huger, and I'm trying to be part of that.
I think we're all wanting to see something bigger and bigger happen in the face of everything. Well, thank you for calling, Gordon. Right. Appreciate it. All right, 503-231-8187. I don't know. I always also feel a little nervous about bringing up particularly gory details that I don't feel are necessarily mine to bring up, but those are all historical, truths that need to be addressed. I mean, I'm personally tempted to, sometimes to go into issues of, how to make my way of doing it is saying that I really see the sort of Rainbow Coalition vision of Fred Hampton as being a really particularly powerful one. I know there's, Rose City Justice Coalition that's come into being with this current moment. I haven't been a part of it for various reasons. I really haven't been involved in these street protests. I don't know, how that's going, but I can maybe show my age sometimes by the things that I refer to, but the Rainbow Coalition being a moment where you really did have a multiracial, a powerful grassroots, radical, multiracial struggle, and you saw the threat that it posed to the system by the brutality with which it was met, with Fred Hampton being murdered in his bed. But let that not dissuade us. There's more safety in numbers, and there's more safety in true allies, or some people prefer accomplices, of the European American derivation, like myself. There's more safety in a wider, broader movement. People may be putting themselves in front of more vulnerable, exposed people and communities in dealing with these forces of repression. Anyway, 503-231-8187, what does freedom in this movement to you mean? And how far does it need to go? How far do you want it to go? Got anybody waiting online, Sonia?
I believe Barry is with us. Go ahead, Barry, you're live.
Oh, hi, Paul. I had to compliment you or somebody that had that introductory song, Freedom Isn't Free. It says so very much.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to tell you that. And if you've ever, you remember the book I brought up before a lot of times, and so, a lot of people don't want it mentioned, Solving 9/11 by Christopher Boland. He wrote a bunch of articles during the time of the downing of the World Trade Center and the they say a lot of things that you don't ordinarily hear, so that there's kind of a veil in between that other people that made the official report and then us people around the country, you see?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Like when somebody wants to cover up a crime, you know?
Yeah, indeed. There's been lots of cover-ups. This country was virtually founded on crimes and covering up of those crimes. So, you know, people talking about 9/11 is probably the most, one of the more current manifestations. But really, I mean, the foundations of the country are basically something like a massive 9/11 that was covered up. So yeah, it's an old story that keeps recurring over and over and over again until we do something about it, right?
Yes. Well, the Boston Tea Party, that was to do in what was going on, what was clearly going on to everybody, and they just didn't put up with it here. This was
no, it wasn't going on to everybody. I mean, the imposition. I mean, the people who were able to express themselves at the Boston Tea Party were privileged white men. They weren't the women. They weren't the enslaved people. They weren't the indigenous people. They dressed up like Indians out of sort of some sort of perverse impulse, I think. But we got to look at the real history. The Boston Tea Party was a much more complex. It was a more of a commercial class phenomenon. You know, the revolution was, a lot of it was because people just wanted control, commercial control of this continent for themselves, as opposed to the British. You know, we need to look at the real meaning of the War of Independence. But anyway, that's what I think about it anyway.
Excuse me, Paul. It was a war of independence, and that war was won, and people went on and tried to do the best they could to bring our country about, and we're going through growing pains now that probably a lot of countries have never been through, Belgium, the cruel things that they did. Now they're apologizing for things that they've done. Now, with our nation... there's this law, there's this curtain of subterfuge that's gone down to cover up a crime, and that crime has to be uncovered, or our very very foundation of society is going to be this pandemic is coming on to us, is going to be formed. That,
okay.
What I'm saying is that this crime is going to be growing in the foundation of our society to come. You see?
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Barry. I always appreciate your perspective and your passion about the continuing issue of 9/11, which is definitely something that has had a huge impact on this new millennium, a massive impact. It, in fact, had a massive impact on doing away or diminishing or repressing or marginalizing the movements, mass movements that were occurring just before it. So yeah, it's an important thing to recognize. All I'm saying is that I'm not sure doing the best we can is the best characterization of what the United States is all about. But anyway, let's give other folks a chance to call in, 503-231-8187. Again, if you're a regular caller to KBOO, perhaps just step back for another few minutes and let other folks who ordinarily don't get a chance to call in to do so, especially voices that tend to be marginalized in the society. And you probably know who you are. 503-231-8187. We got to be waiting patiently, Sonia.
The line is currently unoccupied, so those folks who, as Paul says, normally don't feel like there's room for you, there is now. 503-231-8187.
Thank you, Sonia. So another thing I was thinking about was this sort of reduction of freedom. Well, freedom is actually an interesting word. We could talk about how freedom is different from liberty. It's got a sort of a long tradition of looking at that back to John Stuart Mill and beyond, but how freedom tends to be reduced to the individual in our culture, the cult of the individual, and how it's important for identity-based movements and mass movements in general. It's important that these occur because, as our first caller was saying, Gordon feels very powerless in the face of the massive forces that we are up against. It tends to give back a feeling of agency and power. For example, it's difficult to topple a heavy statue by yourself, for example. I'm not advocating such a thing, but, you know, I remember when back in the Earth First days, we were up in a, I guess I'll still not identify, national forest in Washington State. I'm sure the statute of limitations has run out anyway, because I'm sure if I say this, it will identify, because somebody did notice it. Anyway, there's this big culvert. I mean, big. I'm talking about a big culvert, which was going to go into a stream, and we were against bridging and putting culverts across trout and salmon and other fish-bearing streams, especially anadromous, ocean-going streams and rivers, and taking down the dams that are there. Anyway, there's this huge culvert there. It must have been 10 feet high. And we're like, well, we wanted to block the road. And so the first response was, it's impossible. I mean, that thing must have been 20 feet long, 10 feet in diameter, concrete. I mean, heavy, heavy. So the first thing was just, you know, well, that's a ridiculous idea. Then, I don't know, I think someone sort of put their shoulder to it, a couple more people, and like, after a few people, it actually started to budge a little bit. You know, and there's some risk because, you know, if you shove it forward and it comes back on you, you know, you could be hurt. But anyway, we got into this rocking motion, and the thing, darn if that thing didn't start to move, and we actually got into the position. Anyway, that was very empowering. One of a number of you know, similar empowering situations where, you know, or, you know, building blockades on logging roads where, you know, if you're by yourself, it's rather difficult. But if you've got a bunch of people, you can move big logs and big rocks and such. Again, I'm not advocating any such actions. I'm just saying that if you've got a lot of people, you know, I was kind of hoping that enough people would get inspired to go and decommission sections of the Dakota Access Pipeline that were already in place, but very hostile territory and very difficult circumstances. But, well, that's kind of a... Anyway, that's the kind of thing that I think of when I think of a collective empowerment, because I'm a direct actionist. But there's many, many, many forms. You know, just enough people to, you know, block a roadway or surround a building, or, you know, like at the WTO in Seattle, speaking of the movement that was derailed by 9/11 in 1999, just surrounding and not allowing delegates to enter the building. So anyway, we see ourselves in a similar movement. How the movement is gonna, you know, how it's gonna be able to continue to take creative direct actions to keep people involved and gain more victories. I mean, we've, you know, seen maybe this kind of maybe the statues are kind of low-hanging fruit in a way, sort of somewhat easy targets. They're, you know, they're there, they're visible, they can be taken down. You know, more difficult targets are these, you know, these long-standing institutions and budgets, which themselves are being challenged. I mean, budgets for police have now been curtailed. can we actually start talking about curtailing the military budget, which would free up immense amounts of money. So I guess I keep veering into the arena of what's happening in struggle when I talk about freedom, because, you know, they're intimately connected. Anyway, I raised lots of subjects. I'd be interested in what you have to say. 503-231-8187. We are already past the half hour, so we have less than half hour left. So if you do want to get your call in, it might behoove you to do it soon. Got anybody waiting?
I believe we have Mark on the line. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Thanks for taking my call. We could nationalize the banks. I think Spain has recently done that.
Well, what do you mean we, though? That's the big question, is how do you get to the we, the power of the we, to be able to enforce it? I mean, I could give you a list of 1,000 things that we could do.
Well, I'm calling to wish you a happy Canada Day.
Oh, yeah, is that today?
July 1st, yes, and two incredible and very empowering examples in Vancouver are the 26 community centers that they have and the refugee welcoming center. It's a three-structure building that was created in 2014 with 200 beds. I think we need to create public spirit. We need to create. Justin Trudeau said when the state trusts citizens, citizens trust the state. Now,
I'm not sure I'll ever trust the state per se,
right.
but that's another kettle of fish. So yeah, no, you've called before and made similar points.
Well,
so you're basically saying that we need to get together, and you know, because if public space is denied us, we need to create our own public space. You know, obviously through protest, but you're saying we could actually get together and create our own public buildings, you know, to engage in various forms of our activity. That's something I've long advocated, and I totally agree. How would we take the steps to opening up more public community spaces?
Community centers make all the difference.
Right, but how would we take the active steps to making that happen? Now that
I send emails to Ted Wheeler, he never responds. We should have.
Well, starting with the top is always a wrong approach. You got to start from the bottom.
You know, we're witnesses to a zillion boutique hotels when we should have a village of SROs by the old post office. That's very concrete. That should be very obvious. It's a perfect
location.
Well,
there's people who are occupying buildings in this time, so that's an interesting idea to maybe
to do many things, because we are now living in a boarded-up country, a country that's not welcome in other countries, you know. I think maybe August 1st we might be able to go to Canada, but right now we are a source of vulnerability. So thanks for the time, and thanks for your passion.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. And I've been thinking about that autonomous zone in Seattle, which apparently has been, I'm not sure if it's been dismantled. I've heard conflicting reports. There's probably something this morning on it. But I always find occupied zones very inspiring. Of course, I can't advocate for any illegal occupations on the air. That wouldn't be right or legal, but we can talk about, you know, existing or possible examples. So there's, you know, a couple ways. You know, one can occupy as a way to create public space, either temporarily or longer term. I know in Europe there's occupied social centers that some of them have been going for decades. I know in Italy I hung out at a number of them. The oldest one of the oldest ones was, God, I think it's maybe going on 40 years now. Started in, I think, in the 1970s, 1980. Anyway, that's a really interesting example. Of course, property rights are less, there's just a different relationship to property rights. Landowners, if you let let a property go abandoned for a long period of time, you lose some of your rights. And so there's loopholes that people can use to enter and hold properties. So, there's occupied, but people can get together and pool their money. I mean, there are community centers in Portland. There's, the community recreation centers. We have one in the East Portland. It's got a pool. It's got meeting rooms. It's got exercise room. It's got a kitchen. Churches are somewhat community spaces. There's kind of moves to by churches that are losing their denominations to open up their spaces, like the Tabor Space Cafe, and it's got lots of nonprofits that now are housed there. It's got meeting rooms. There's two indigenous centers. The Naya Native American Youth and Family Center has a large center up in northeast Portland. There's Portland State Native American Center. There are African American spaces in this town. There are a number of community centers, obviously bars and cafes to some extent. I know the Anaris had their anarchist center was in North Portland for a while. They're looking for a space. So yeah, there's lots of ways to move. I think we could pool our resources and maybe get some sort of large multicultural activist center going. These are lots of good ideas, but somebody needs to take the lead and get it started. I think expecting it from Ted Wheeler, as our previous caller perhaps suggested, is maybe not the most effective way. I think the city of Portland is probably one of the better places for starting and maintaining and protecting its community spaces, so we should appreciate those that exist. If you've got any ideas about this or other things, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Who we got up next, Sonia?
Not at the moment. Do we have Steve?
Hi, how you guys doing?
Hey, Steve.
Thanks for taking my call. I don't have much faith in collective property ownership. It's just there's the problem of the free riders. And, without anyone owning it, it's difficult to ensure responsible stewardship. But I didn't.
So you're saying it doesn't happen anywhere? Or are you just saying
I'm highly skeptical. But I didn't call about that. I want to just comment on the defund the police, logo or slogan. And, the left is getting its ass kicked by, by the rhetoric of the right. That's just, defund the police is just not going to be a popular, it's simply not going to have the mass appeal. And you look at the language.
It seems like it's gained traction already, though.
Again, it's gained traction with the, with the 20%, of the population that agrees with it. But again, it's not likely to achieve a critical mass of support. But let me move on, if you don't mind. The right was successful in setting the tone for the argument on inheritance taxes by calling it a death tax. Very, very effective use of language. I would invite people to consider using entitlement reform as a way to revisit the discussion of inheritance taxes. When you consider the fact that this is an unearned income, unearned wealth passed from generations that may be deserving to generations who, you could question whether they deserve to inherit so much. But if we talk about it in the context of entitlement reform, which Republicans have been all over, they want to cut Social Security and they want to cut benefits, they want to cut all social programs and entitlements. But if we say, let's talk about entitlement reform, should we have means testing for people like Donald Trump and Warren Buffett, who are likely or collecting Social Security checks on top of it? Should we have means testing? Should we have inheritance tax reform? So again, we just need to be a little smarter in terms of what slogans we're going to get behind. defund the police. I'm like, good luck with that, guys.
Okay. Well, as I said, it does seem, it seems like it's initially gained a fair amount of traction. If there are other ideas to be, I mean, it's an idea that was put out in the context of an actual movement, and it has already gained a certain amount of success. So, I mean, if it can be built, I'd say, you know, just criticizing or discarding it might not be the best strategy. If it can be, you know, if other ideas are as good or better, then I think, you know, you should propose them. But as I said to a previous caller, I think the best context is when it's in the context of actual participation in movements, where they can actually, you know, the free market of ideas, as it were, can perhaps see which ones are the best. I mean, sometimes, you know, ideas are taken up because, you know, there's maybe certain people have a more share of the megaphone or whatever. But I think defunding the police is something that's been put out there by some of these groups that have been working against the abuses of the police and for either abolition or reforming or whatever of the police for a long time. So I think they need to be taken really seriously.
Well, we'll see, you know.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call. I think the entitlement reform is a good, certainly, idea that turns the tables. It it shows the what who are truly entitled instead of the idea of these you know, so-called welfare cheats. Anybody who's getting welfare is supposedly entitlement, or anybody who's getting Social Security is that's an entitlement, which is obviously ludicrous because people have been paying into the Social Security all their working lives. Anyway, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. 503-231-8187. We only got less than 15 minutes left. Can you believe it? The show is already zipped along.
It's been a hot one, and we've got a couple of lines open, so now's your time, folks. 503-231-8187. Oh, here's one coming in. Paul, I'm going to check in with this caller here, and you just keep things rolling.
All right. That's my name, almost. Paul Roland. Roland. Anyway, yeah, we're talking about all sorts of things. You know, July 4th is coming upon us. And, you know, the idea of freedom, you know, it was true, really, the establishment of the United States was a freedom to colonize, a freedom to exploit, a freedom to enslave. And so, unfortunately, white people, you know, got sort of made a bargain. Well, the ones who weren't in charge, the ones who were in charge, you know, they kind of took over a piece of the continent, and then, you know, just kept on expanding. And, you know, and the people who weren't in charge sort of made a bargain with the devil to get sort of their limited realm of freedom in exchange for suppressing the freedoms of other people.
Paul, we have a caller waiting to come on. Karen, go ahead. You're live.
Hey, Karen.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Paul. I just wanted to put a woman's perspective in. I won't take long. I won't take up much time. I was thinking as we were speaking of the need for women's centers where instead of just shelters for abused women, but which is terrible and tragic, and we need more of those, but we also need men not to do that to women. What I'd like to see is women's centers. A lot of women are afraid to relate to men in a joint space, and because of abuse. And I was thinking of Marissa Alexander, the African-American woman who was released finally after almost 6 years in prison for firing a warning shot. As I recall, it was through the ceiling of her garage. She had an abusive husband. This woman rotted in jail with a 20-year sentence and finally got out of either jail confinement or home confinement after almost 6 years. So I would like to see freedom for African-American women in the justice system. I would like to see what happened to Sandra Bland not happen ever to a woman. They took, probably because jails and prisons do this, they take away medication, and she had epilepsy. And I don't know whether that cause it can cause depression when you take away epilepsy medication, or whether she was actually hanged by somebody in the staff. And obviously we have to think that way because of what happens in public to African American men so often. So I wanted to also bring up Breonna Taylor, police entering her home. Freedom, no freedom in that space. And I wanted to say that freedom to get education, that's free. Freedom to get health care, that's free. What other countries have? Housing for people, that's free. It's part of your entitlement as a human being, your right as a human being. That should be available to everybody in this society, especially starting with Indigenous people and with African American people, with women, poor women, white women, African American women. We just need a total overhaul, and it's not happening. And movements in the streets are good. Yes.
Well, could we get back to your point, your initial point, which I thought was a very interesting, intriguing one, the idea of women's centers. I know that out of the women's movement, from what I understand, the women's movement did, it did start to create women's only spaces, you know, women's consciousness raising groups. And
yep.
And out of that, there were women's centers, both, you know, urban-based and rural-based, the whole sort of back to land. There's women's land spaces around. I know Oregon has had several that have lasted for decades. And, I don't know that much about, you know, in the city in Portland, specifically women's only spaces. It'd be interesting to hear more about them. But again, it's another.
I know about Boston, and there were spaces for women, but unfortunately they were not always welcoming to all women, and cis women didn't always feel welcome. So it's very tricky. At the time, people who were more discriminated against needed their space. It's the subsets within any given group of discriminated against people. So I don't want to go into that, but consciousness raising was essential. I was part of that whole movement, and we did research on sexual and racial stereotypes in the Baltimore school system, and in alliance with an African American vice principal, we did get, after our study was presented, we did get some of those books changed out. So it's just a constant struggle, many, many decades.
That's for sure.
All right. So
that's a constant. Well, thank you for calling, Karen. I mean, everything's an organizing challenge, often a financial challenge, a challenge of, you know, people being able to work together. You know, I think in some ways, working together on the streets is sort of the, you know, it's difficult, but in some ways it's the easiest thing. You know, when push comes to shove, to actually forming longer lasting arrangements. I don't like to say institutions. I'm sort of against institutionalization in a way, but something that's a different word, but sort of means something similar, something that's long lasting. I think when we got away from, you know, face-to-face land-based communities many thousands of years ago in some parts of the world, more recently in this part of the world, that's created a lot of problems, because, you know, that's the, you know, face-to-face communities where people deeply know each other and do everything together is really the way we are meant to live. And this mass alienated society, oh, it just makes everything so difficult. And we, anyway, don't get me off on that subject. 503-231-8187. We only have about 5 minutes left. We got any last callers waiting? Sonia?
I believe, do we have Robbie?
Good morning.
Oh, hey, Robbie, what's going on?
Oh, you know, a lot of activity on the streets, as we were saying. I called in because of the one caller who said defund the police isn't going to get
I don't know, mass approval or something like that, and said good luck with that. I wanted to say, you know, his cute word, entitlement reform. Good luck with that. but I think to an ultimately larger degree, you know, the semantics that I think a lot of people are afraid of, and that's partly why we need to take this defund the police and, you know, inform people what it is we mean by this, because it sounds like he was one of the individuals who takes comfort in knowing that he can call the police. And so I just kind of want to bring up, you know, a lot of people don't have that privilege. When I was younger, I had the talk, you know, if you call 911, you call for an ambulance. You know, you do not call the police because, well, you know, we all know, I don't have to go into that, but, you know, the community that I was in was highly, you know, Latinx. And so there was our own communities, you know, slaughtering of, you know, brown innocent kids. But that being said, I just wanted to really, you know, we need to take this part and you know, and remind people, which, you know, you do on this show all the time, you know, police came from slave patrols. You know, police are trained with this one, I don't know, some sergeant or lieutenant police officer who created a whole training thing called killology, which trains police officers to shoot to kill. It trains them to not be distraught when they do have to kill or kill somebody. I didn't mean to say do have to kill, but whenever they're, you know, trained in this killing sense. Like, these are all things that need to be brought up with defund the police. And so I agree with them in the one stance. You know, it's confusing for certain people, but I don't think we should abandon the term. I think we should just start trying to explain to people, like, who called in and said, oh, you know, you're not going to get mass approval. It's like, well, actually, you know, it's funny, because when you start to think about it and you hear what are the alternatives to policing, you know, then it makes more sense, which is why it gained so much traction. You know, last year when we were calling for, you know, I've always called for abolishing the police, it made no sense to anybody. Now it does. Now we can speak to white, liberal, middle class America, and we can inform them of what do we see when we don't see police officers. You know, we see community, you know, resource officers. You know, we see, you know, psychologists. We see the you know, crisis response. I don't know if that's the right term, but, you know, people who are first responders without a gun and a badge, who I don't know if there's a really, really shocking thing. And I'll wrap it up quick here just to take my own words off. I appreciate you taking my call. But there was a report that's been heavily redacted by the FBI, and it's how white supremacy groups have been infiltrating the police force. So these are things that we need to tell the people who are, you know, reluctant to say defund the police, because ultimately what that guy was saying, and I find this so funny, with the side of, you know, oh, well, you know, that's not going to work well for our side. That very notion of questioning it is what makes it not good for our side. So these people need to either get with it or, you know, join the other side. If they think funding the police, which is what reform means, if you think funding the police, which they ultimately use just for weapons and artillery tanks and whatnot, you know, that's one side. Or we're going to address the problem of this racist police. Anyway, thank you so much, Paul. Have a great morning.
Yeah, thank you, Robbie. I guess you're saying, which side are you on, is basically what you're saying, if I could boil it down to that. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, things run by line item budgets in this world. So if you're going to really get somewhere, you got to deal with the budgets. And so this is hitting them where they really are vulnerable. You know, there's this idea of actually challenging many of the programs and many of the areas of control where the police thought they had a kind of a monopoly is major. It's, you know, I think Robbie's totally right. We need to explain what is meant. I mean, if someone has a better slogan, I guess, yeah, advance it. And if people take it up, then great. But I think defund the police is a fairly succinct way of expressing it. Well, we are just about out of time. I don't know if we have time for one more caller, if we have anybody. Got anybody up?
Not at the moment. I think it's time to wrap it up.
Probably a good thing. All right, we got about a minute left, so I'll just say it's been great talking to you. I'll be with you probably with Jacqueline Keeler next week, my second Wednesday co-host, if she's up for it and available. Yeah, well, I guess that's about it. This is Paul Roland with Wednesday Talk Radio. Thank you for board opting, Sonia, and thanks to the staff of KBOO. And once again, we do survive and thrive on your donations as a listener-sponsored community radio station. And if you haven't supported us recently or want to increase your support, go to kboo.fm and click on donate. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Tribes aren't just getting these things for nothing. They got these things because they gave up the United States. That's what they gave up. And that's what the federal court said. That's why they don't pay federal taxes. Tribes do not.